Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Blue Moon.
Welcome to the Man City Show. It's Nigel Rothman back in the chair. And despite stubborn defence from Everton, City went briefly to the top of the league. And even now, after the games at the weekend, we are still, what, just 2 points off the top with a game in hand. KDB and Haaland made the difference, although it wasn't that pretty, I don't think. It's a change of scene on Tuesday night. FC Copenhagen in the last 16, first leg of the Champions League. And then it's mid-table Chelsea at the weekend. Lots to discuss with my three guests. Welcome to A View from a Blue, Stephen Allwise. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Nigel.
Welcome to Stato Paul Denby. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Nigel.
And welcome to very youthful Nick Goldstone. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nigel.
Listen, Stato. It wasn't that pretty, was it, for at least the first 70 minutes? And I have to say, in the same breath, I thought Everton were superb defensively. I don't think they've had enough credit, actually. I thought Dyche set them up well, really strong defensively, and City didn't have much of a... I don't think they had a shot on target in the first half.
It was very, very unpretty, to put it bluntly. That first half was probably the worst we've seen City perform for a long time, because we've been playing very well. But Everton defended stoutly. We had shot after shot, but we had nothing on target because they blocked everything. We never looked threatening in the first half. And as we got into the start of the second half, they then started playing for more and more time by going down for injuries, which is what you'd expect, and wasting time. Not criticising, it's just a fact of football these days. And then, of course, the magic happened. But until then, we looked very insipid. Couldn't break them down, couldn't get around the back. But I think you're right, Nigel. They defended very, very well. They were well organised. And they have got, I believe, the most clean sheets in the Premier League as well. And you could see why, because teams will struggle to score against them. But once you'd scored against them, they had to open up a bit more, and then we saw what happened.
I was talking to an Everton fan before the game, and he kind of did say, we will defend well, but we just can't score. And that's kind of how it turned out in the end as well. Stephen, fair comment from Stato? Is that a fair assessment, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was an awful game for, well, the first hour or so. I think it surprised me, actually, how one-paced we were going forward, because Pep actually had some of the... not attacking players, but risk takers. So Foden in the team, Doku in the team, Alvarez and Haaland. It wasn't necessarily the slightly slower, more controlled approach we might take in midweek against Copenhagen. So I was a bit surprised, but you know, Everton were brilliant defensively, as you've both said, got the tackles in, got the blocks in. But I guess when that is your approach and you are going to sit deep and try and get your body in the way of everything, you have to be perfect for 90, 95 minutes. And it takes one ball to drop in the box from a corner that wasn't cleared, and suddenly we're one up. And I'm sure we'll go on to talk about Haaland and how that's his skill. But I think when you do defend so deep and that's your approach, you have to be absolutely bang on, and you have to hope we have an off day. And, you know, we had a couple of moments where we came to life and we get the win. So, yeah, Everton did well, but that is the beauty of our squad at the moment.
And Nick, in terms of this kind of this poor performance of the first 70 minutes, not pretty, however you want to talk about it, four changes. It wasn't kind of a full-strength squad, you could say. A couple of maybe the fringe players, you could argue, with Nunes, for example, in the side, doesn't get many starts. We do look vulnerable on the break as well, don't we, as well? I mean, although, you know, we didn't have a shot on target, as we said, first half. But I also feel we also look quite vulnerable as well at times.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we played a relatively weak team. And to be honest, we paid Everton what turned out to be the disrespect that, quite frankly, they deserve, because, yes, you can say that they defended fairly well and there was a professional element about how they went about the game. But, frankly, it was a bit embarrassing. And I thought that it was a performance that smacked of Sean Dyche and the way that he's managed every team that he's managed. And he got, as my dad said, because he was sat next to me at the game, and he repeatedly said it, and in fact he said it probably about 25 times during the game and on the way home, they got exactly what they deserved, which is absolutely nothing, because they cheated and they played a pretty poisonous sort of game of chucking yourself to the ground and pretending to be injured until they were behind, and then all of a sudden that magically disappeared and got nothing. But at the same time, you know, we were pretty poor first half. We lacked penetration. We lacked any real ideas. I thought McKenzie looked, you know, really out of sorts. And, you know, ironically for those, well, you can't see me for those people listening, but ironically, he looked overweight actually, but he really looked like the wrong player in the wrong position for that game. And then, of course, it all turned around, and we finished them off. But it wasn't one; it was one for the history books.
All right, we'll leave your weight to one side for a second, Nick, and go back to Stephen, and just talk about then this change then, and we have to talk about Haaland, who.
Well, I was just going to say I was going to pick up on Akanji, if that's all right, because I thought, yeah. I think Nick's bang on. I think he really struggles in that defender going into midfield role, and that's not necessarily a criticism of him, because it looks really hard to do, and the reality is teams don't do it. Pep was the first with Rico last season. Stones has taken a long time to get to grips with it. Liverpool, I guess, have copied us with Trent going into midfield, but that's because he's very good on the ball. But generally, teams don't do it, centre backs don't do it, and I think Akanji looks really awkward. Takes so many touches, he doesn't seem to have his bearings around him, and I think it just slows us down, especially in a game like that where Everton will put 10 men behind the ball and basically say to us, break us down, we're not really going to come after you. I think it did cost us. Just on Nick's other point, I don't really blame Everton for setting up that way, to be honest. I think if they had opened up and played two up front and tried to press us and take us on, we'd torn them to pieces. So I understand that is the best way that they could have approached that game. Sit back, if it's 0-0 after 80 minutes, maybe then you look for a counter-attack or a set piece. But they did limit us. Fortunately, we had the quality off the bench in De Bruyne. And, you know, Bernardo then when we went 1-0 up just to control the game. And I think, you know, that's where our squad depth and the quality will come in handy. But I'm not sure I want to see Akanji too often in that defender into midfield role.
It's funny, I was in a different seat to the one I normally sit in. I'm normally in the cheap seats on level 3 in the Colin Bell stand. And as I was queuing up to get in, I bumped into an old mate who had some spare seats much lower down, halfway line, kind of just behind the dugouts, you know, near the prawn sandwich brigade, padded seats. And I thought, yeah, go on, why not? And had a slightly different view. And Pep was far more in my eye line, and it was really interesting. He almost not every time, but you could see he was getting increasingly frustrated with Akanji as well. It was really, you know, it was quite obvious, and I wasn't surprised when he was substituted, of course. So Nick, do you want to pick up then on this change then and the impact that we've all talked about? It was a poor game. It wasn't a great performance. Yes, we can either credit Everton or we can take your dad's view, whichever one you choose. It doesn't really matter. But actually, something happened and a player came on from Belgium. I'm not talking about Doku here. And things changed. Quite almost instantaneously. It was almost magical, the impact that he had. Do you just want to sort of talk through how you saw that?
It was a very, very significant, clear and immediate change in the way that the game was played. And but, you know, how couldn't it be when you bring on a player like De Bruyne of that quality, and you know you're effectively replacing Akanji with De Bruyne. It's got to make that change, hasn't it? You'd be absolutely astonished if it didn't. I mean, actually, in some ways, you could say, look, we scored a slightly scrappy goal from a corner, but you know, when you've got that level of pressure and you've got those many people in the box for that much of the game, then something's bound to drop for you. And, you know, you've got to mention Erling Haaland, who couldn't possibly have hit that ball any better and any harder than he did. Pickford, actually, who I think is a really average goalkeeper in many ways, but he actually did pretty well to just get anything remotely on it. And he was slightly unlucky because just the touch that he did get could have had it flying into the stands, but it was just such a big hit that it went in. And then, of course, you know, actually, in some ways, it was the goal that really changed the game rather than the changes. The changes, you know, definitely instigated a difference in our performance. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But we were slightly playing with one hand behind our backs. And that's not to be really disparaging about any one player or other, but there were just a few players in the wrong places, you know, and I thought Pep obviously wanted to sort of mix it up a bit. He wanted to make some changes. He wanted to give some players some time and others a bit of time off as we go into the Champions League games, etc., which is absolutely fair enough. But it was that goal that really changed everything, actually, because Everton changed the way they played. And we were then able to really capitalise on that. And Kevin De Bruyne was obviously pretty much the best player in the world to be able to capitalise on that extra space that he got.
I mean, I'll leave it to you, Stato, where you want to start. But I mean, obviously, the impact that De Bruyne had, but those two goals from Haaland, I mean, it was his wrong foot, of course. It was his right foot. He prefers his left, which we saw when he scored the second. He positioned himself to make sure he got it with his better foot. And of course, De Bruyne's contribution as well for both goals. Two very different goals, of course, but brilliant in their own right. Your reflections on kind of De Bruyne and Haaland?
Well, clearly they're both world-class players. Haaland doesn't do much in games, but he scores goals. And that's what wins matches, as we know. It's very basic football, isn't it? It didn't have much contribution. He either had little bits here and there, laid the ball off a couple of times, but didn't get the service or didn't get the chance that he needed. However, when that chance came to him in about the 70th minute, was it? It was just brilliant. You know, he didn't think about it. He's got his balance and he just swung his right foot at it. No keeper in the world would have saved that. It was so powerful from what, about 8 yards out, give or take. Pickford got his hand to it, but if he'd probably got his hand more fully in the way, it might have broken his wrist. The power. It was a superb strike from a world-class player. The second goal was a fantastic break because they then opened up Everton. They came at us a little bit. Didn't that look really threatening? Ake won the ball at the back. Threaded De Bruyne, who had acres of space, bad defending by Everton, but De Bruyne looks for that space. Haaland's run was absolutely superb because he effectively went the other side of Brathwaite, who was looking over his wrong shoulder at that point in time. And the ball from De Bruyne was, as we expect, first class. And from that point onwards, it was a, I don't know what you call it, man against a boy, although he just shrugged him off the ball as if he was a little kid. Seriously. And then, as you say, moved on to his left foot and a superb finish again. And, you know, you go back to the match last week against Brentford. I know it was talked about, but he missed a chance like that the previous week, whereas bad defending. So he doesn't score every single one of those chances, but he scores the important ones that really matter. And that's what counts for us. But two world-class players, and that's why.
I think it's spot on, because Pep said, was it a couple of weeks ago when Haaland came back, that Haaland, talking about Haaland and De Bruyne, that they're not the type of players who will help us play better. They're the players who will help us win games, which I think is a bit harsh on De Bruyne because he's so fundamental to how we play and he's got everything in his locker. But I think it's really true for Haaland because he doesn't help us as a team, as a unit, as an 11, play better. As Paul says, he barely touched the ball all game. But that one chance that he gets, he takes. And if you think to a couple of years ago, if that had fallen to Jesus in the team, he wouldn't have scored. So that's where the Haaland, the clinical touch, the real world-class striker comes to the fore. And he does work hard. And I think, you know, he's adapted a little bit to how we play. And he does tend to drop deeper occasionally and try to link up play. But his strengths are you get the ball to him in the box and he wins you matches. So it's interesting that Pep almost, you know, wants to make the point that maybe as a team we play better without him because he can play Alvarez up there or he can play a false nine and the whole unit and structure's slightly more fluent. But Haaland is the one who will win you games because he scores you goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, and as we're getting to and towards the business end, it starts to sort of remind me of this time last year, around about this time last year, when there was a little bit of a step change in terms of how we played and a much more direct route towards Haaland. You know, it might have been a bit later in the season. The Arsenal game springs to mind very clearly as when that happened. But, you know, Haaland, let's face it, he's not had the greatest of seasons to date, but it doesn't matter a jot what he's done till now, as long as he does what he has to do from now on, because the next 3 months is when it's all going to happen. And, you know, we've got this astonishing sort of alignment of all of the planets with all of these players back fit. We're right in the mix. We've got it all to play for. And, you know, it just starts, my mind just starts whirring around when if Pep's going to be thinking, having seen that goal and that last 20 minutes, that, yeah, we can start doing that again and getting the ball a bit more quickly towards KDB and Haaland, opening up opportunities. And actually, the Chelsea game this weekend possibly could be a really good opportunity for that, because I think they may well... I guess we're going to talk about that a bit later, but they're going to come to that with a bit more optimism, depending on how they get on Monday night. And with the memory of the game at Stamford Bridge in their minds, and play a bit of an open game with us. And actually this time we could absolutely destroy them if all goes well.
You raised an interesting point that was raised earlier on Twitter by a certain Paul Denby, who asked the question, which kind of links very much to what you've been saying, Nick. And he said, despite being in prime position in the league in the last 16 of the FA Cup and Champions League, there still seems much negativity on social media about City's performances and the ability to win trophies. Is this just the City fans with long memories of the bad days? Maybe Sato, you can answer your own question first, if you like.
I'll have a bash, because I think it is to some extent. Yes, we didn't have a great game on Saturday. We were poor in the first half, but we still won. Up until that particular game, the last few matches, I think we've played very well. But people jump on the negative side of it as soon as it becomes apparent and think that this is the end for City. We're not going to win anything. To me, yeah, winning the treble, I'm not even thinking about. to be challenging for all three is all you can ask for at this stage of the season. Whether we go on to lift any of them, we'll wait and see. But as long as we are challenging and we're up there and competing, then who knows? And to me, yeah, we've not played brilliantly in some games this season, but we're grinding out results where we need to. We've conceded silly goals. We've lost silly points in matches. We know that. Crystal Palace at home, Tottenham at home, Chelsea away. Last-minute goals that cost you 6 points, those three games alone. But we grind out results as well. We've now come on our last four away games in the league, come from behind to win. So that, again, great mentality to show the strength of character of the team and what Pep instills in them. So it's different to last season, but I want to remain positive and think that we can go on and challenge for all three. We might end up with zero, but as long as we're challenging, that to me is satisfactory.
Do you recognise this negativity, Stephen?
Not really. I've not seen as much on socials, but maybe that's, you know, following different people or not spending as much time on it. But I think the only area that I'd slightly worry about is almost everybody talking now in the sense of, oh, in the last few years, we go on these winning streaks of 10, 12, 15 games. And therefore, it's that time of the season, City come alive, we get that winner's instinct. At some point, we're not going to do that. At some point, we're going to hit a wall where it may be in March when I think we've got Liverpool, maybe Arsenal or United, and you know, some tricky fixtures. And, you know, we're not going to go on that run of 10 consecutive wins. But I also think the league itself is stronger this year. I think there's more teams who will take points off each other at the top of the table. So I think the best... Pep will be absolutely delighted that we are around the top of the table as we speak, having not had De Bruyne all season, having missed Haaland for a couple of months, having missed Stones as well, who is so crucial to the way we play and allowing us that control. Pep will be delighted that the others have stepped up. Foden's been unbelievable. Alvarez has basically meant we've not missed Haaland. And you've just got to keep that momentum going. We've got a favourable couple of cup draws, I think, on paper. So now is the chance to kind of put a bit of pressure on the others.
Do you want to respond, Nick, to Stato's tweet?
Yeah, I'm not really feeling the negativity.
Your dad is, though.
Well, yeah, but he's been dealing with negativity for about 65 years. I wouldn't worry too much about that. I'm not feeling the negativity. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to win everything. I think, you know, there's no God-given right why we'll go on one of those astonishing runs again. We've had poor patches up till now during the season. And we're kind of thinking we've probably got past the worst of it. And now we've got the squad back to where it is. It's just in, you know, say the planets have aligned in a way that they very, very rarely do. And actually, you know, if you look back this time last year, we were bloody awful. And frankly, we didn't think we were going to win anything. And then it all happened. So it's impossible to tell. But, you know, the odds are in, or the cards are, seem to be stacked in our favour right now. I don't think either Arsenal or Liverpool, who are the only realistic challengers in the league, I don't think they are, you know, phenomenally good teams. I think they're good, and I think if they win it, either of them would deserve to, but they'll have to put in a big run, and they know they'll have to. Equally, you know, Arsenal could be the ones who could really challenge us in the Champions League, and I'd probably be more scared of playing them than anybody else at this point in time if we were to beat Copenhagen. But no, I don't think there's any real negativity around it. I don't think we've played exceptionally well in most games. I think we've gone through most of the season playing well for parts of almost every game, but not all of them, and we've paid the price for that. So it's about consistency now.
I just kind of wondered whether you got a view about, you know, two players who play in the same position but play very differently in terms of how Pep's going to use them going forward. And of course, as we know, keeping a squad of superstars happy is something that Pep's been pretty good at. But rumour has it that Grealish is not happy. And whether you've got a view on that, Steve, and how you see that, those two, and how they show up.
Yeah, I'm sure Grealish is not the happiest, given that the second half of last season, I think he was probably our best player. Every single game Pep played in, every game he kind of took on this role of, at times gave us control, slowed the tempo, which is what Pep wants, at times drove at the opposition. I thought he was brilliant. He clearly hasn't hit that level so far this season, and especially at the start of the campaign, Doku came in and with this energetic breath of life who sort of just took on defenders and made things happen and was raw, and you can see that. And there's times you think, just pass the ball, and he holds on to it. But I think they're very different. Doku, it's almost like the game plan when Doku plays is you isolate him on the wing. Gvardiol doesn't get forward, and Doku is just take him on-one, make something happen. Whereas Grealish fits the system, I think, that we've seen a lot more in the past year or two. And neither of them really can play anywhere else. Doku, I know we've seen him on the right a little bit, but he seems much more effective on the left. So they are competing for one place. Then you've got Foden, who can also play there if needed. I wouldn't be surprised if Copenhagen away, first leg of a Champions League knockout, I would not be surprised to see Grealish start as the safer option. But he'd clearly got to win Pep's trust, not trust necessarily, but that trust at the moment that he can deliver on the pitch.
Not easy keeping them both happy, is it, Nick?
No, but I mean, one of the things I came away from yesterday with was thinking, you know, Jack Grealish could have a phenomenal impact in the final stages of the season, even though, you know, he's not had a great season. He has been criticised by some for some of his performances, pretty rightly. I mean, he's not played well, quite honestly. He's had limited opportunities, and he's not really made much of an impact when he has played. But I do think he could have a really significant impact, and if you've got the likes of Rodri and Foden and Haaland and KDB, who are all playing really well, then, you know, Jack's role, controlling and holding on to the ball and all that stuff that he does, becomes really important. And, you know, you'd probably look to that sort of player rather than an impact sort of a fireworks kind of guy like Doku, particularly when you get into the business end of the big games. So I think he could have a really, really important role to play. And hopefully, you know, one could understand that it'll be a little bit frustrated, Jack Grealish, but hopefully he's just grown up enough now and look back at the careers of other City players over the past few years under Pep, who've had patches in seasons when they haven't done very much, and then they've come back and completely turned it around, that he will look at that and think, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to sit there, I'm going to do what I need to do, and if I need to sit on the bench, I'll sit on the bench, and when I'm needed, I'll do the job. And that will be a massive contribution to our season.
And Stato, as Stephen said, they're two very different players, aren't they, of course? I know they play in the same position, but actually I'm sure Pep will use them in the games where, as Stephen rightly says, where he needs more control, probably Grealish. But if he wants that burst of excitement and taking defenders on, then it's obviously Doku's turn. But still, a difficult balance to maintain, I suspect.
I'm sure it is difficult, but there again, I agree with what we've just said. Effectively, look at the games that we've got coming up in March. I think we've got Liverpool away. That is a Grealish-type game rather than a Doku-type game, because Grealish gives you a little bit more defensive capability because he comes back a bit more. Doku started doing it, but Grealish fights for the ball and he'll keep the ball longer. Doku is a riskier player and might lose the ball, and that Liverpool will be faster to tangles. Copenhagen tomorrow night. I would be playing Grealish, but I'm not Pep. The away matches, you would tend to play more Grealish-type games rather than Doku. But they're both great players in their own way. We need Grealish to return to the sort of form that he had at the end of last season.
Just one point, Nigel. If nothing else, Jack Grealish could lend Jeremy Doku a pair of decent boots so that he actually stays on his feet for more than 20 seconds. That would be a vital contribution.
How many times did he fall over on Saturday?
More than the Everton players, which is saying something.
Yeah.
he gives the ball away too much for me anyway. But I've been too used to watching the current City team for too long that we certainly used to give the ball away a lot more when I was a lad. Stato, just build on what you said and take us to Copenhagen then, will you? You obviously mentioned it's a Grealish-type game. What else do you kind of predict is going to happen? How else do you think Pep's going to approach this game?
Well, we played them in the group stage last year and we had that great goal from Rodri disallowed because of a marginal handball against Mahrez. We've got the capability of going there and winning. I'd like to think we do. We can and we will. We're a better team than them. Yes, it's a big match for them. They'll be right up for it. But if we have any pretensions, which I'm sure we have, of winning the Champions League, Copenhagen do not present a major a challenge to us, and I'm not being big-headed as a City fan because we've all been there before, but we've got to be able to see off Copenhagen, and I'd like to think we'll a comfortable win. I'm not saying we will win comfortable, but we should be winning by a couple of goals in somewhere like Copenhagen. Look, they put the Reds to the sword, but that's easy nowadays, isn't it, unless you're Aston Villa.
Yeah, I actually think it's quite interesting looking at the date of the second leg, because normally Pep would probably be quite happy with a draw, or obviously he wants to win, but I don't think he'd go all out in the first leg away from home. But actually the second leg falls in between games against United and then away at Liverpool. And I think if you can just, you know, it's dreamland, but if you can score 3, 4, 5 against Copenhagen away in the first leg, as we did a few years ago, was it Sporting Lisbon maybe? Yeah. And basically allow yourself a rest before Liverpool away, that'd be huge because, you know, we know how difficult we found it at Anfield in the past, especially I think this year with Klopp and that sentiment around him. It'll be an absolute cauldron to go into. So you want your players as fresh as possible. So I think I'd love it if we win heavily, but I think Pep will go for kind of, I don't know if we'll see Alvarez. I think it might be Rodri, KDB, maybe Bernardo in midfield, with Foden, Haaland and Grealish. But who knows? Picking Pep's brains is impossible at the best of times.
Nick's nodding in agreement. So that sounds like, what about the back four then? Is it a job for Stones? Is he fit enough? Is he going to fit in? Is he the sort of the game that he's going to start, Stones, do you think?
I don't know. And I think it's almost impossible to know what the 11 is that he's going to pick. I'd like Stones to play, but given that he played at the weekend, maybe he won't. I don't know. Stevens made it the point, which is that a very comfortable win makes life that much easier for the second leg, and that is a vital week. So, you know, I expect us to qualify, but actually this game tomorrow night is more important for that reason.
Stato?
Yeah, picking up on the points about the fact that we play them right in the middle of the, playing the two red teams. Liverpool are in the Europa League, they've already qualified for the next round. Their match preceding us playing them on the Sunday is on the Thursday. So let's hope they do get a challenging away draw as far away as in Eastern Europe as possible. That means they've got a horrible travel home. I don't know who's left in that competition, but that would help us, wouldn't it? So a difficult draw for them when the draw is made away from home in the first leg.
Brilliant. Let's briefly look at Chelsea then at the weekend. I think I was being polite when I said mid-table. I think they're probably just about below mid-table at the moment, aren't they, Stephen?
Yeah, I think we might look back and, you know, if the season doesn't pan out perfectly for us, think the point away at Stamford Bridge was two points dropped, but one of the worst performances, results of the season, because it was so open, which should have suited us. 4-3 up with, you know, 10 minutes injury time or whatever it may have been. And it was such a needless penalty to give away. And I can't remember if it was Paul or Nick who said Palace was the same around that time, which is so true. Their form is not great. They won't have a midweek game like we do, but I think you know, we should have enough about us. We've got a really good home record against Chelsea in recent years, so you'd like to think we'll raise our game again for that. And, you know, continue this momentum that we've got.
The quarter-final draw for the Women's FA Cup's just been made, and we've drawn Tottenham Hotspur away. But I guess you know that by the time you listen to this podcast, but my guests maybe don't on the show, so there you go. That's so you know we're playing in the next round.
We just beat them 1-0 in the League Cup last week as well.
Indeed. Absolutely. So, right, Stato, Chelsea.
I'm with Stephen. We should have beaten Chelsea, but they raised their game against us, and two ex-City players had fantastic games at Stamford Bridge. Even Sterling had a brilliant game against us that day. So did Cole Palmer, as if they've got points to prove. And I hope they don't have such outstanding games coming up this Saturday. Yes, we're a better team than Chelsea. They are, as you say, a mid-table team at best, and we should be winning these games. 4-4 was a terrible result in hindsight, conceding 4 goals to a poor Chelsea team. But it was a brilliant match to for neutrals to watch. But I would be disappointed in anything other than an easy victory on Saturday, because they're not a great team at the moment. Liverpool put 4 past them a week or so ago, and there's no reason we can't do something similar.
The final word this week's with you, Nick.
Chelsea. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not a pushover. Be interesting to see how they play the game. I mean, as I said earlier, they might come out and be pretty positive and optimistic, in which case we would expect to put them to the sword. They might play a fairly defensive game and try and be organised and tight and play on the break, in which case it might be another slightly uncomfortable afternoon. We'd still expect to come away with the points, but it wouldn't be guaranteed. So, you know, it's like a bit interesting, really, in terms of what Pochettino does, actually, because, you know, I think we know what we're going to do, because we're going to do what we always do. I would expect us to play a strong team, and I would expect us to be really up for the game. It's probably a good thing that it's a 5:30 kickoff rather than a 12:30 kickoff, because those 12:30 kickoffs are a bit soporific and everyone's half asleep. We didn't talk about Nunes, but he was definitely half asleep on Saturday. But, you know, I would expect us to play a really strong team against Chelsea and win. Hopefully it'd be a good game. Can't quite see them playing as well or doing as well as they did against us last time when, you know, we all went on. I certainly talked about how exciting the game was and how great it was. And, you know, even though we didn't win, it was a great game and had a great evening. But, it, you know, that was then. This is now. We just won the points.
We do indeed. Thank you very much to my three guests, to Stato, Paul Denby, to a view from a blue, Stephen Allwise, and from an ever youthful Nick Goldstone. This is Nigel Rothband saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.